Hi there. I'm Paul Boger, host of KNPR State of Nevada. Enjoy this conversation from the show. If you like it, please follow us, and thanks.
There's no shortage of what to see, hear, and do at any time in Nevada. Back to talk about a few of the best options is KNPR's Mike Privat, who oversees the arts and culture beat for Nevada Public Radio. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Paul.
I have a bit of a teaser for the new Desert Companion issue, which comes out tomorrow. You open your shortlist column with news that there's not just one, not two, not even three opera events this weekend, but four. When in the falsetto did Las Vegas become a major opera destination?
Well, I could barely believe that news myself, but it is a reminder that Vegas is not as bereft of culture as its critics or cynical Nevadans would loudly suggest.
All right, so what's going on?
So in short, through the ambitious efforts of all three Vegas opera organizations, to partly answer your question there, plus the partnerships with the Las Vegas Clark County Library District and its various performance spaces. So this means, dear opera-loving and opera-curious listeners, anything performed at any of these branches are free.
I gotcha. So what are some of the events?
So let's start with Vegas City Opera. They're producing their Songs of the East program for the first half of the month at various locations. This will be a presentation of Asian and Pacific Islander classics. Now, on Saturday, May 2nd, the organization produces a separate event, and that's called Music of the Night. And this is an outdoor performance, and this one's at the Goodman Plaza at the Las Vegas Civic Center. Not at a library, but also still free.
All right, that's two by my count. What are the other two?
They come from Opera Las Vegas. One of them is their interpretation of Pinocchio, which seems like a great opportunity to introduce the young ones to opera. This will be at both a few library branches and also at the Winchester Dondero Cultural Center. That's from May 1st to May 8th. And then Opera Las Vegas will also have a go at the classic Madama Butterfly, and that's in partnership with the third local opera organization, which is the International Opera Institute. And that production will be scattered throughout Valley Library branches, but for a longer run. That's May 2nd through May 31st.
That's a lot of opera and lots of operatic opportunities for the old kiddos.
Mm-hmm. Did you get that out of your system?
I did. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
So speaking of kids, I hear Rainbow Company Youth Theater's latest production is doing something interesting with Peter Pan.
Yeah, I don't know who knows this beyond theater fans, but somebody came up with a Peter Pan origin story. And in fact, it was former newspaper columnist Dave Barry and author Ridley Pearson. They wrote a book called Peter and the Star Catcher back in 2005. That was adapted as a play 5 years later and then debuted on Broadway 3 years after that, won Tonys and everything.
So it's a backstory. Is that what Peter and the Starcatcher is about?
It's about an orphan named Boy, you can guess who that is, and a girl named Molly. You're probably not going to guess who that is because that's Wendy's mom. They're on a sailing ship somewhere, and then they're apprehended by a pirate crew headed by a character not so coyly named Black Stash. The voyage goes awry, they all end up on an island, and the rest is the combination of the predictable and the unpredictable.
I think I know how this ends. You know, that's the problem with prequels. You already know the ending.
Yeah. I will say a bonus for this production, regardless of how you even feel about the story, is that it's a Rainbow Youth production. And that means it's a young cast and crew. If you weren't already familiar with this acclaimed theater organization and how they run things. Actually, I should correct myself here. There are two casts for this 6-show run. And that goes between May 1st and May 9th at Charleston Heights Art Center.
Hopefully this version of Peter Pan avoids the problematic depictions of, you know, indigenous island residents. But, you know, moving forward, okay, for your final pick this week, you've got someone who is problematic, but, like, in the best ways?
Are you a David Sedaris fan?
You know, I work in public radio, so I think I'm required to say yes, but, like, also yes.
I have been reading him since college, so I am. For those of you who have not heard him on this or another NPR station or read one of his collections of usually personal, hyper-exaggerated stories, Sedaris is one of the best and most well-known humorists of, I'd say, maybe the last 30 years. And for your show consideration purposes, listeners, he's not only great at writing funny stories, he's also great at telling them.
Tell listeners what you mean by funny.
Well, when I say funny, I don't mean in the conventional sense, like a comedian or an actor. Sedaris' stories are subversive in a cringe, unhinged way. and he's often throwing his family, his partner, even himself under the bus in pretty eye-opening ways. And it's as dry as the Mojave, which he delivers in person with deadpan perfection. I should also say that he can be a little sentimental and sweet in his stories and talking style, so it's not all ironic and absurd. I want to remind fans, big bonus here, Sedaris likes to do Q&As at his appearances, so audiences can ask him questions. And then he's also slated to sign books before and after the performance, and that's on May 5th at the Smith Center.
That's a lot of access to an NPR favorite. That's all the time we have for this week. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, Paul.